Hello and welcome to our INE office hours call for the month of August 2017. This is a call where people get together from a variety of different programs, whether you're in NEPT or CMDS or IRSPT, and you can ask questions, get support, ask me to take a look at labs. This is not a case studies type call where you, you know, submit like 15 labs and a whole history. Those happen on our NEPT calls or our specific CMDS or IRSPT case study calls. So those are different. But this is great if you have questions about a particular client, you have questions about any of your coursework, you have something you want to run by me, you have a lab you want me to take a quick look at, we can do that on these calls. So the way that we get, that you get help here is you raise your hand, star two, if you're on the phone, and you can also type into the Q&A, and I'm going to look to see if anybody pre-typed in questions, because sometimes that does. Yes, Shamima. Typed in a question, so I'll start with that, and then the chat or the Q&A box. The Q&A is a one-way street. Basically, you ask me a question, but nobody else sees it, and then the chat, and that's good if you have a question specifically you want me to see, because the chat sometimes gets chatty, and that's a two-way street, and so a lot of times I lose sight of the questions because they fly by so quickly. So if you have a specific question that you want me to ask answer during the call, you can submit in advance or during the call in the Q&A box, and they're both sitting on the right side of your screen. And the chat's back and forth, and, you know, I Lynn helps with that, and she can usually keep track of it better than I, because I'm talking up a storm here. So the way I'm going to start today, I don't see any hands up yet. Cynthia, put up your hand because you submitted your labs and you have a question, so that way I'll get to you. And then I'm going to go to Shamima's question, which is, I have a client who's been taking liquid magnesium chloride and colloidal silver spaced out for many years. He had no problem for many years. However, recently on taking either magnesium or colloidal silver, he ends up sneezing profusely with watery eyes for a few hours, feeling quite sick and drained. He now reacts when he takes anything cold. Can you advise, please, as to what is happening? Okay, so I don't have really enough information about him, about what might be going on to know, but sometimes people develop sensitivities or they overdose on certain nutrients. It could be his body's way of saying, hey, we don't need these anymore. It looks like he also reacts the same way. Does he react the same way with sneezing, watery eyes for a few hours, sick and drained? Or is there a different reaction when he takes something cold? So, I really don't know his history. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what he's eating. I don't know, has there been a recent exposure to something? Did he change brands of the magnesium chloride or colloidal silver? So there's a lot of questions that we want to ask when we're trying to solve a problem. And I would highly recommend that you go through the power of why that we put in as part of the CMDS launch sequence. We also have, you're not in NEPT, but that's a great place to start, and it gives you an idea. Like, we want to go, well, okay, why? So what are the possibilities that could be happening? He's taking some supplements. He's been doing it for years, but suddenly when he takes it, he's sneezing with watery eyes for a few hours. So we want to know, is he taking it with anything else? Is he taking it with food or between meals? Has he switched the timing of when he's taking it? Has he changed the dose on what he's taking? Has he changed the brand on what he's taking? Is anything else going on? A recent exposure, moving, traveling? What are all the different things that are playing in to him maybe being more sensitive? Did the company change the formulation? Does he have any other allergies? Is this the first time he's ever experienced this? So I'm giving you not an answer to what is happening, but I'm giving you a set of questions for you to ask him to help you to figure out and play detective, right? When we're trying to understand what's going on with the client, think of yourself as a detective, Sherlock Holmes. Okay, what are all those little clues that might be happening? And ask those kinds of questions, okay? So that's my answer there. Okay, so coming here, Cynthia has her hands up, and I'm going to pull up to the labs that I just opened for you. Dropbox, there we go. So I see two in your folder, Anna G and Vicky G. So I'm going to open up your line, and I'll open both of these. And let me open that one. I'm going to open both and open, Dr. I have to do them separately. Hi.
Hello. If we could start with Anna and then we can wait on Vicky.
Okay. All right, let me open that.
Or we could do Vicky too, but I wanted to, allow other folks to have it.
Yeah. If there's time, we'll do both. So I've got Anna open. So tell me, what do you specifically have questions about? Let me just go. There's two different files, so it's an Excel and then the other's a PDF. So let me look at the PDF. Oh.
So primarily, and I think this will have broad applications to all the different groups that are on this call.
Yeah.
The doctor has prescribed certain medications, forms of B vitamins, B12, excuse me, and I'm just trying to find the.
Okay, first tell me a little bit about, she's a 46-year-old female, high anxiety around her health. High anxiety just around her health or high anxiety person overall?
I think overall, yes.
Overall, yeah. So she's particularly concerned about her health at this point, but that's just like the topic of the day, whatever. She'd find something else to be concerned about if the health was okay, probably. Just guessing, right?
Yes. And she has a lot of bloating and distension, which I didn't really mention, and constipation. So those were really the presenting issues. And then I think I listed some things.
Yeah, you listed pernicious anemia and thyroid, autoimmune thyroid, which both can contribute to constipation and bloating, right? Pernicious anemia is, where there's it's a B12 deficiency caused by usually antibodies to intrinsic factor in the stomach. So she's an autoimmune type, right? So autoimmunes usually don't go in singles, right? They usually double or triples, whatever. So she knows she's got these two. She had a hemangioma on her liver that's significant concern due to size and location. Is that something longstanding, or she had that for just a short period of time?
I think within the last year.
Within the last year. Numerous gallstones, one that didn't leave the gallbladder neck during the ultrasound last week. What do you mean it didn't leave the gallbladder neck during the ultrasound? Normally, they don't move.
The findings reported that. I didn't know what that was out of the norm necessarily for.
Okay, so the ultrasound, I thought, okay, got it. During the ultrasound, they found that she had a gallstone and one didn't, it was in the neck, basically, sounds like.
Yes.
Uterine fibroids.
She actually has numerous gallstones.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And one of them is in the neck.
Yeah.
Okay. So it sounds like it was on its way out or it's getting close to being on its way out and it didn't quite, make it out. So the gallstones, do you know if they found the gallstones in the gallbladder or in the ducts, the other ones?
I believe in the gallbladder.
Okay. And then uterine fibroids, she has a tendency to form things that she shouldn't form, right? Hemangioma on her liver, gallstones, uterine fibroids. So proliferation of tissue in a way that shouldn't really be happening. So I'm just thinking out loud. It was my thought process as I go through this history of high stress, strong-willed, and denial about low stomach acid. I'm working on studying about B12 and folate connections in her case. Okay, so questions, particular questions or concerns that you have and that she has at this point.
So I think my first one is that the doctor has put her on B12 cyanocobalamin once a month since March.
Mm-hmm.
Anna does not think it's helping.
Yeah.
So she changed or she added the hydroxycobalamin every other day.
Okay. And what the doctor gave her, was that a monthly injection or?
So she's
adding this twice a week, the hydroxy as an injection or as an oral supplement?
Injection.
Okay. Okay.
And she doesn't think that's helping either.
Mm. What is she expecting to see when she feels like it's happened? She thinks she expects to have like instant energy, or what is she looking for when she says she doesn't think it's working?
Well, my thought is that she's exhausting herself with trying to figure out and chase down different rabbit holes.
Yeah.
You know, some of her blood work came back, her ferritin, she was freaked out that it had gone so low in the last. Well, let me tell you one more thing, too, if I could. She was taking Venafor infusions in late March and April. She had
what kind of infusions? Say that again.
Venafor.
Okay.
I think those are iron.
Okay. She was taking them as infusions, as so she was IVing them in, or?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. And she's on Nature Thyroid 65 milligrams. And I know this isn't a full case review opportunity. Primarily, I'd like you to look at, if you could, the iron, some of the lab.
In her tracker, yeah.
Help me strategize. How do I help her in light of the diagnosis and the prescription of the doctor, which may be hurting her?
Yeah. Well, how is she getting the infusions, the B12, the hydroxy, if the doctor's not giving it to her?
So the hydroxy, she is now self-administering.
So does she a nurse, or how did she get the injectables? The usually you have to have a prescription to get an injectable.
Yes, she has a prescription.
Okay, so she's got another doctor. So is she working with two doctors, or did the doctor give her a prescription?
Yes, the doctor has given her both.
Okay, so she said, I don't think the cyano's working. I want the hydroxy. So the doctor gave her the prescription. And she's been getting the injectables on the cyano herself. She's been doing it herself. So she already
Correct.
Has her paraphernalia. Okay, got it. Now I'm getting
it.
Okay.
She wanted more. She felt
but
like
she wanted more, and the doctor said, okay. So first of all, I'm just looking at this and say, well, somebody who is in denial about low stomach acid, who has a diagnosed pernicious anemia, is living in la-la land, okay? Because, you know, her stomach, her cells in her stomach are being destroyed. Her parietal cells in her stomach, intrinsic factor and stomach acid are very closely connected. And so she's definitely going to have that issue. So it's somehow educating her, maybe find an article or something that you can educate her about that this is super important and all. The other thing that you need to do when somebody has got, you know, two different autoimmune diseases like this is really chat with her about the whole process of healing from autoimmune. There are steps that have to be done, and all these different things have to be taken into account. Her blood sugar has to be taken into account. The leaky gut and the health of her gut needs to be taken into account. Her stress levels are feeding into it, right? High cortisol levels, so her adrenals are feeding into it. So all of these processes are feeding in to this issue. And then, you know, she's got this autoimmune. The autoimmune has to be addressed, or she's not going to be absorbing anything. So she's got low iron. She's taking supplements. She's got B12. You know, it's because her stomach isn't working properly. You need good stomach acid to be able to break down any iron supplements. So, of course, she had to get an infusion. Same thing with B12.
Right.
So the stomach issue is super important. Like it's up high, you know, her stress issue is super important. So when we think about digestion, I always say digestion begins in the head, you know, and then it goes down to the mouth, and then, you know, the esophagus has to be working properly, the stomach. But she's got two high level places where this is out of balance, her head, her stress, right? Her thought processes, her hypervigilance, if you want to call it that. And her stomach itself, right, where there's antibodies attacking it. But the connection between pernicious anemia and autoimmune thyroid is the immune system. And the immune system starts to do these crazy things when there's a bunch of stressors and, of course, a genetic tendency towards it, right? So those are some of the educational pieces. You've got some really good descriptions of for thyroid in the Thyroid Revive and Thrive program, part 5, and also in our thyroid module, which I'm not sure you have open yet because you haven't gotten to that part yet. But if you go to the Thyroid Revive and Thrive, part 5, there's a thing called thyroid balancing step by step, and there's sections for each of the different thyroid presenting thyroid conditions. And go to the autoimmune, and you know, feel free to copy paste some of that stuff out, put it into a doc. So she doesn't have to. I don't want you to give her the whole document, but pull some of that stuff out under autoimmune and just kind of, you know, in your own words, use some of that to say, look, this is what's going on in an autoimmune condition. You have two of them. In order for us to heal this, these are the step by step. I have an approach here, but we have to go through this and balance all of these things, because just taking B12 shots or just taking iron infusions, none of that stuff is going to work unless we work on all of these pieces. Does that make sense?
Perfect. Yes. And we're working on all of those. I actually tried to release her back into the world last week, meaning fire her as a client.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think there's probably a genetic COMT link here, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She said on her intake she hasn't slept well since a child.
Yeah.
And the conversation we had on one of the calls about fibroids, uterine fibroids being related to molestation or...
Yeah.
That just keeps coming up for me, so I really try to approach her with a lot of love and, you know, empathy.
Oh, yeah. She needs it. She needs it badly. But she also needs to heal those emotional wounds, and she needs to get the chemistry balanced. So we know that anxiety can stem from the gut, right? It can also stem from these adverse childhood things. So there's pieces that she needs to know she needs to do. And you have to work gently with her. Looking at, I think getting her genetics could be good, but looking at, okay, if she's hypervigilant, would you say she has a tendency to be, you know, on the verge of or deeply involved in OCD type behavior where it's everything has to be go this and you have to do it this way. That's, you know, usually oftentimes part of it, or anxiety, which you already said. So she could have some issues with serotonin, right? So she has leaky gut and her microbiome is off, her serotonin is off. So I'm always thinking of what can you do, you know, in a situation where there's so many things and stress is a big piece of it and the anxiety is a big piece of it, but some of it's out of her control. What are some of the things you can do symptomatically to try to ease some of that? Right. You might have her take the NEPT program on the history taking piece. There's a neurotransmitter test, or in the Edge Effect book, there's a neurotransmitter test, and see where she tends to lie in terms of symptomatically to group her. Is she more of a GABA imbalance type, a serotonin imbalance type? I would suspect one or the other or both of those. Right? And are there some things you can do with some targeted amino acids that can help her to at least take the edge off some of the anxiety so she could calm down her immune system so she could get some sleep?
Yeah.
Does this make sense? Probably not stuff you haven't learned, thought about before. But yeah, this is complicated. So what happened when you tried to release her?
She came back. I ended the call pretty much saying, let's just take a step back and we'll both go think about and reflect and we'll regroup for a brief time the following week. And in the meantime, it was all love and kisses. And
What did you tell her though? Did you tell her, I don't feel like you're ready for what I have to offer? Did you tell her, I don't think I can help you? How did you phrase it?
How did I phrase it? She was pushing all my buttons, Dr. Rita Marie.
I've had those types.
I know you have. And it was a huge growth opportunity for me. And then I remembered, I think Dr. Datis Karazian said, if somebody is, behaving badly or a pill, think about their brain.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I'm here to serve, so I'm working on it. And apparently she was having a love fest about me with the woman that referred her to me earlier this week. I haven't heard from Anna that. I heard from the other woman.
Yeah. So these types have a hard time expressing it because they want to keep you you know, tied into their chaos in their brain. And they're trapped in there. So for you, I think, helping her with calming down her brain can be very helpful. And there are resources that you can look at, but you do herbal medicine. Like, what are there some herbs that you can use to, you know, nervines and those sorts of things that you can try with her that maybe you haven't tried yet to help her calm down, but also neurotransmitter precursors, B vitamins. Is she taking enough B6, right? Especially if you suspect that she has some issues with the COM-T, right? So the B vitamins, the 5-HTP, those things could be very helpful.
So, okay. And
I can look at I'm happy to look at the labs, so I just don't want to get off, but I wanted to just, I want us to focus on what's most important here. And
it's all very, very helpful, and I appreciate that. One of my questions about the labs was when I was trying to wrap my head around all these B12 and iron stuff, I was trying to figure out, could we determine from the labs that she had signs of pernicious anemia? Because when I first met her, it was, of course, a crisis. She was going in like 3 days later for endoscopy and colonoscopy because she worked herself into a complete tizzy, you know. But when I did the comparison on the pernicious anemia lesson, you know, she has elevated MCV, she has slightly elevated MCH and TIBC.
Yep.
But those were the only indicators that I'm understanding about pernicious anemia. So could we have figured this out? Because I have another client that I'm thinking.
Yeah, you can't say pernicious anemia. You can say B12 imbalance insufficiency because it's not even outside the lab range, which is a ridiculous lab range, by the way. But it's high. So there's that says to me there's definitely some indication of a B12 issue, especially since she's been so iron depleted, right? If she's iron depleted, I would expect an extreme low on MCV. But she's not getting even anywhere near low, which says to me, let me look at her iron real quick. She's got,
her serum was 138.
Oh, her iron is high then.
Well, let's see. A while ago, it was, back in 9 of 11, it was 122. And then
she had it at 24 on one date that you don't have a date there, but it just says 24 way back before 9/11, 9/25/11. But then it was up to 122, 104. She been supplementing throughout this.
She had the Venifer infusion in March, April. Of this year. So if she had those infusions in March and April, would it take until June to show up? I don't understand that.
She had them in March, April, and then there's it could. I mean, it was 104. We don't know what it was in between because the last one was 11. So you don't know what it was right before the 17. It could have been 22, right? And it got up to 104. Then it got up to 135, and then 134 and 138. I mean, it's dangerous to have high levels of iron, especially in a female, right? How old is she? Is she menopausal or is she bleeding monthly?
She is bleeding monthly, and last two periods were very heavy. This last one, since we've been getting her off the gluten and cleaning and getting her off the fat diet, things have quieted a bit.
So she
has to hear from four different practitioners.
Yeah, and she will hear the same story from all of them before she decides it's true, right?
Yes.
And here's the thing. I would say that if she's on a fad diet and she's just like taking her time to get off of things, and you just reiterate with her, look, these are the imbalances that are impacting, that are stressing you in addition to the stress itself. These are all things that are stressing your system. And there's just so fast that your body can react. Now, it's going to react more quickly if we can get you on, you know, some sort of cleansing regime, some sort of, you know, a real strict elimination diet. But you know, it's working with her, but I can see where you would be frustrated because if you know what she should be doing, but she's not doing it, but then she's pissed off because she's not getting results.
Yeah.
That's a no-win situation because she's got the driver's seat there, but she's blaming you for going in the wrong direction. She's got the steering wheel and she's heading in the opposite direction to where she wants to go, but she's blaming you and her other practitioners for not getting her where she wants to go. And that's like, there's a losing proposition there. That's totally like, it doesn't work, right?
We have turned the corner.
Well, are you firing her? You know, it's kind of like with kids when they know you're serious, right? They turn around, but when you're so nice and you're just you know, it's sometimes so you need to like be giving them gentle kick in the asses, basically.
Okay.
A1C isn't bad. So blood sugar, you know, it's a little off, but iron transferrin saturation. Where's the ferritin? Let's see.
Well, and it was interesting on the hemoglobin A1C because six of this year she had a glucose reading of 48. And I'm going, what was up with that? And she couldn't explain it. I think because of her bloating and distension and constipation, she has been afraid to eat.
Okay.
And so her blood sugar, she just was probably hadn't eaten for 24 hours on that glucose.
Yeah, but it was 80-something, so this time, this is no big deal. I'm looking at, though, her ferritin. Why is she upset about her ferritin coming down? It's coming down to where it should be.
Yeah, and you know what? I did the blood chemistry software and sent her that section.
Yeah.
And that has helped her.
Because you don't want this. She needs to get her iron levels down. And if she stopped taking the infusions, if she's not supplementing with iron, it's most likely going to do that. But you're going to have to find that. I think it's something you're going to have her keep testing. Like test that iron again in a month, test it again in a month, and just keep testing it because if it's, and the ferritin to watch because if they start to both go down, you've got to find a spot to halt it and be able to, with dietary approaches, with herbs, with, you know, a whole foods iron supplement, small amounts, just find the sweet spot there. Now, who knows why she was so low back in whatever date that was before 11 where she was at 6. I mean, that's ridiculously low for ferritin, and her iron was ludicrously low, too. So something was going on there. It could have been a bleeding, right? It could have been an internal bleed. It could have been any number of things, right? So she's over the hump there. She's got it in a good range for the ferritin. The iron is coming down into a better range. So it's a matter of just I would keep on top of those once a month.
Oh, okay, good.
You don't want her to go too far the other direction.
Okay. And you see her – her D back in May was 9. So that's contributing to her anxieties.
Yes. How much D is she taking?
You know, I've kind of given up tracking. I know she's taken it. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, but it's only 30. So it's only gone from 9 to 30 in, it's just 2 months. So 2 months to go from 9 to 30. I think you can do better than that. So if you say, look, I'd like you to get higher. How much are you taking now? Let's double it and go back in 6 weeks or even a month when you retest the iron, do this. Or you can do all of them at 6 weeks. I think you'd be fine. So just give her 6 weeks. We're going to retest your D. We're going to retest your iron. We're going to retest your ferritin. Don't do anything with taking any iron. Just leave it with, you know, just eating a good diet. Get on your greens. Get off the gluten, and get on double your D, and we'll check it. If it gets to be too high, we'll spec it off. It's not gonna hurt. She's not gonna go from 30 to 200 in 6 weeks if she went from 9 to 30 in 2 months, right? So rest assure her that it's not gonna get you into a dangerous level, but because of, you know, the anxiety, the depression, the autoimmune, all of those things, healing a leaky gut, we must get those D levels up.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
And how can they give her these injectable B12s without even testing her B12 levels, even the serum level?
Well, I don't think they need to. I mean, MCD is a good enough thing. What's her homocysteine? They could check homocysteine. They could check methylmalonic acid, but they haven't checked any of it.
No MMA and no
There's no homocysteine in here. Let's see.
Should I request that?
You know, given where she's at right now, I said, given where she's at right now, her iron and her ferritin are such a way that, yeah, she's not going to, that's not going to be contributing to microcytic anemia. So I would say that the MCV is enough, but the thing I would be concerned about is the, if you are giving somebody injections, I would say you want to be monitoring to see if it's doing anything.
Yeah.
Right? So you should be seeing the MCV going down. If it, if the homocysteine's elevated, it's a great indicator. Homocysteine starts to go down, you know the B12 is getting in there, right? And MMA, you know, I haven't done, I don't do MMA that much anymore because I just feel fairly confident with the MCV and the homocysteine. And if I'm making headway with those, I generally feel like, you know, if we're not, then I would look at it, or we have somebody. But with pernicious anemia, she's battling against her B12 absorption, so she needs it somehow. Patches, there's some new patches that have come out that she can do, but they're methyl. And if you're suspecting COMT, you'd want to get her genes before you start giving her too much methyl. But you certainly can give her some liposomal methyl and see if that helps her, like with her energy, like a little bit, but just a drop or two. And go very slowly and tell her if she gets more anxious, she feels kind of depressed, irritated, angry, like she wants to hit somebody, then she needs to back it off.
That'll be good. That'll be a good conversation. That'll be good. Okay.
Okay. You got some stuff to go on? All right. Let's see who else has stuff. And if there's nobody else, we can come back to your other person. Okay.
Yes, thank you so much, Dr. Yunling.
You're welcome. All right, so that was Cynthia. Who else? Is that, was that helpful for anybody? I mean, I know you didn't see the labs, but we talked the numbers. So, I mean, when you're looking at people's labs, whether you're in CMDS, IRSPT, you're in NEPT, you're looking at labs. Labs are, they're so valuable, but you have to think them through. We're not, it's not black or white. This is high, this is low. This is high, so let's make sure you take away whatever supplementation or foods are you're doing. Like some people take people off of greens because a nutrient's high. Like, really? Let's look at the mechanism. Let's look at why. And when we look at the various things, we teach this in the NEPT blood chem module, and you know that's the kind of module you want to go through over and over again, do tons and tons of them, do the blood chem software, which we supply in the NEPT program. But those are the things that help you to actually see functionally what's going on with the person. Oh, she's got low iron, let's give her iron. Good. Yeah, you got to give her iron when she's at a six. But why does she have low iron? What's the underlying mechanism? Is there something that's interfering with iron absorption? Likely she's, you know, it's this pernicious anemia thing that's affecting all her minerals. So it's not just iron, but they're isolating iron because we can test it easily. And so she's probably got low minerals in just about everything. You can run the mineral questionnaire on her to say, let's just see if there's some indication of other minerals, because you really do need to get more minerals. And with pernicious anemia, I'd be doing a liquid mineral, you know, swish it around in the mouth for a while so that some of it gets absorbed under the tongue, and then swallow it and hope that, you know, it gets absorbed through the cells as opposed to having to go through the whole process of, you know, cleaving it with stomach acid, et cetera. So does that make sense? Let me see what anybody, who else has a question? If not, I'll go to, is it okay with everybody if I just go to the other case from Cynthia? Let's see. I'm having trouble with this thing moving. Okay, let me see if I can move it up. My scroll bar is not letting me go all the way up, so it seems like this. Ah, there we go, I got it. Hello, so Shonda, Lynn, Mary. Mary says B1 is good for brain and anxiety issues. Yeah, the B vitamins in general are, you know, are going to help support her. So if you can get her on a good liquid B, we like to use B. Lynn asks, we like to use Bs in complex, but also when there's a specific indication for one that's out of balance, I like to do a complex and then add extra of the one that's out of balance. Thorn makes some products like B6 complex, B5 complex, B1 complex, where it's the complex, but then the extra amount of that. So with neurotransmitter imbalances, generally the B6 with, B1 as well can be important also. And that's Lynn Johnson says I would be looking at metals as well as zinc copper ratio. Yeah, and the metals, that's part of that process I told her to go back through, which is the autoimmune process that we have listed in the TRT under Hashimoto's, but that's good. That's true for everything. So leaky gut, heavy metals, liver sluggishness, zinc and copper, and excess copper can lead to anxiety. So looking at the zinc copper ratio, you can look at that in her food. You'd have to do a lot of testing, which at this point, I think first I'd look at her food. A lot of people are on very low zinc diets. She's not going to get much zinc absorbed with pernicious anemia. I mean, she's not going to get very many minerals at all. Yeah. And Lynn says, it's great, Lynn Rose. Often the metals won't test high because they have excretion problems. Yes, absolutely. And you can't just do like a urine test for heavy metals, because a lot of times they're stored in the bones, in the brain, and you have to do a challenge, like an EDTA or DMSA challenge to do that and see them. Hair tests do tend to show for some of them. Yeah. So hair is one of the ways it does. Again, there's no perfect answer. So hair mineral analysis can show that. So hair analysis might be a way to go to figure those things out. Let's see what else. Yeah, right. Lynn just said she works a lot with autistic kids, and they start out excreting little to nothing. So the doctors don't believe they have high levels unless they do a DMSA challenge. And yeah, you have to do a DMSA challenge to draw it out. But you also have to be really careful, and I'm really careful about doing those challenges, because if somebody's already exhibiting brain stuff, neurologic issues, right, and you do a DMSA challenge and you yank out a bunch of those metals that are stored, say, in the bone or other tissues, then they're in circulation, then they can further hurt the brain. So that's kind of cool and something to make sure that you don't do. So how do you address tissue levels is what Lynn's asking. She uses homeopathy, and homeopathy is one way. There are certain chelating agents that can be drawing it out. One that's been studied a lot is modified citrus pectin, and that actually just – it's a slow, gentle yanking. You don't want to put people like autistic kids especially, or people with neurologic stuff, on a DMSA protocol for pulling it out, or even EDTA for that matter, but DMSA will also yank out the good minerals as well. So it's really, really challenging. No, this is good, Lynn. You do, I would say, but modified citrus pectin, look that up. Dr. Eliaz, ELIAZ.com has a whole protocol. But if you just look up modified citrus pectin for heavy metal detox, you can see some of that. Vitamin C, of course, pulls them out. I was listening to Dr. Thomas Levy on my run last week, and he was talking a lot about how vitamin C, getting to bowel tolerance and doing multiple types of C. If you can't get access to IVC, you would be doing liposomal plus vitamin C, buffered vitamin C. You can do the ascorbyl palmitate, which is the fat soluble, and you can actually get higher levels than you would by just doing a buffered vitamin C, because you hit a bowel tolerance. And if you add liposomal, as much as a person can afford, because liposomal is $1 a gram, so it's not something you're going to be taking 30 grams a day of, unless somebody has an unlimited budget, which some people do. So yeah, the vitamin C is good. I would be careful about chelation with anybody who has, like I said, brain stuff. You want to be the fast chelation, because it can really damage. And you also, I would, before recommending anybody do chelation, I'd want to see their genetics. Absolutely. Yeah, that's good. You can discourage chemical chelators. Modified citrus pectin is from citrus, and it's the cells have been modified. Yeah. And it's not just pectin. It's got to be the modified citrus pectin because there's a processing, an enzymatic processing that makes a difference. Yep. Yep. Yeah, I love the liposomal too, and I just wish it wasn't so cost prohibitive because it is very, very expensive, right? I've had people take up to 10 grams of it, but it's $300 a month just to take 10 grams of it. But it can be, it's cheaper. You got to think of it this way. It's cheaper than IV, definitely cheaper. And they've found that 30 grams of liposomal is equivalent in cost, in effectiveness as 30 grams IV. And so it is cheaper than that, because if you're going in for an IV, unless the insurance company covers it, which most of them won't, you're going to be paying a good $150 each time, right? Or maybe more, whereas you can get 30 grams of liposomal. So if you think of it as a therapeutic intervention, you know, maybe once a week, twice a week doing a 30 to 60 gram liposomal instead of an IV, you can use that therapeutically too. Yeah. Yep. Good questions. Will the seed detox the metals? According to Dr. Levy, he thinks it's a great chelator of metals. It definitely, it's not as going to be as powerful, as strong as, you know, EDTA or DMSA, which is going to yank it out, and it's really quick, but it also yanks out all the other minerals. The beauty of vitamin C is it's not going to yank out the good minerals. And so, you know, it's such a balance when you're trying to get rid of heavy metals, but you also want to get rid of, you don't want to get rid of the good minerals. And if you don't get rid of heavy metals, it's a hard time getting rid of candida and the gut dysbiosis. So these are all things that need to be considered. Good questions. Let me see if anybody else had questions. Okay, conference, let's see. Anybody else, star two, will raise your hand if you have questions or comments about anything we've said or questions about your own clients. And if not, I'm going to go ahead and open at least Cynthia's other person, and we'll see if we can find that. If this is as, let's see, I have to open that one, and then I'm going to open Master Tracker. So Master Tracker, for those of you in IRSPT and CMDS, is a file that we give people in our NEPT program as part of the Blood Chem software. And we also encourage them to use it with their clients because it helps you see a visual of all the different things that are happening. So we're looking at the blood chemistry part of the Master Tracker, but and it's a cool little device where you put the numbers in and the cells change color based on whether they're in optimal range, out of optimal, but within lab range and out of lab range to get a visual viewpoint. It's a great learning tool for learning how to do blood chem analysis, as is the blood chem software, which was, I'll give a plug for Dr. Dickon Weatherby, and he created this really great software tool, and I bought it when he first did it, and I pay like, you know, $70 a month or something for a subscription to it where I can do unlimited. And at one point I said, is it possible for others to share my account? Because I'm not using the 60, whatever they said initially, you get 100 tests a month or whatever. So I'm not using it, but I want to be able to do it for my students in the program. And what he went over and above, they gave us a second account, which is just for the students, and the students share the pool, but everybody got their own user ID and password. So while they're part of the program, they can use it. But if you want to, if you have a busy practice and you want to do this more, you can actually pay the whatever it is, 70, it may be a little bit more now because I got in on the early bird special, but you can actually look at that and purchase that software for use in your practice or on your own. Definitely a great software tool, but it's also, you know, it's something that is supplied for a learning tool for our students in NEPT. So let me look back and see if anybody else has raised their hand. And if not, I will, nope. Okay, I'm going to open you up again, Cynthia. Okay, you're opened up again.
Right.
Okay. And so this other person is, let me see. Okay, so let me make sure. Okay, that was that one. I just had to open up the other one. All right.
This is Vicky.
Vicky. Okay, there we go. So she's a 61-year-old with a family history of thalassemia and came to see you for what she thought was candida overgrowth and prediabetes. Okay. All right.
And
so,
in contrast to Anna, she is beautifully compliant.
Okay.
And The reason I wanted to run this by you, Dr. Rita Marie, was the thalassemia. Honestly don't fully understand that yet, but she does have high ferritin at 225 and low iron at 51.
Okay, the first thing you want to look for if you suspect thalassemia is you want to look at the MCV, the hemoglobin, and the hematocrit.
Okay.
Because thalassemia is an issue with getting the iron into the cells and creating the red blood cells and getting the iron carrying capacity. So what you see in somebody with thalassemia is you see a low MCV, you see low hemoglobin and low hematocrit. Okay. Normal number of red blood cells usually. I mean, there can be variations there. Iron doesn't change it at all. Thalassemia is, I have a family history of thalassemia. Fortunately, I don't have it. But I have siblings who do. And they'll be running around with a hemoglobin of 8 or 9 on a good day.
Mm-hmm.
Which is super low. MCVs in the, 60s.
Okay.
Okay. So she doesn't look at, I see that you have an MCV for her on 7. Okay, let me stretch this out because it's, okay, so recent, her most recent MCV is 90.1.
Yep, so she's
okay.
Fine.
So that looks good. Her hemoglobin is 13.7. So it doesn't appear on the surface. Now, the way you test it is there's genetic tests, there's markers for it. It's more expensive testing and she can certainly do it. I didn't ever do it because I never had the numbers to show that I had a problem. But my sisters, you know, and my brother, the ones that have it, they were like, you know, their numbers came back really wonky. And so they said, okay, and I guess one of them came back wonky. They tested them to enough thalassemia. They said it runs in the family. If you have siblings, you better tell them so they can get tested. So, some of them did get tested and, the ones that, you know, said, okay, let's just get tested. I just never did because I never had any other indications for it. Who knows? Maybe I have the genetics for it. It's just not expressing because of my epigenetic, whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know, but I've never tested it.
Vicky's grandfather died of thalassemia. I don't know how long ago that was, and the first cousin has it. So I just wanted to run this by you. So,
yeah.
Okay.
So based on the surface, it doesn't look it. I mean, again, she could always talk to her doctor and say, hey, you know, these people had it. What do you think? The doctor would probably look at this and say, I doubt it.
Oh, the doctor is in denial over most everything.
Okay.
Pre-diabetes.
Yeah, well, the pre-diabetes, let's look at, because the thalassemia, I'm agreeing that it doesn't look like that's the situation.
Well, that's not come up. I just, on this wonderful lab tracker, which has totally revolutionized my world, my confidence, and my interaction with clients, and I have a new client. He's 88. Two of his 14 children are MDs.
Oh, my.
And this has just revolutionized my ability to interact with them. I'm studying like heck.
Good. You're going to learn like crazy. That's great.
I am going to learn like crazy. I am already. So I can't say enough about this and the blood chemistry software, too.
That's great. So I'm looking at the top, though. It looks like you wrote some stuff in. You wrote random glucose. So the random glucose.
Is the 83 that wasn't fasting, so I don't really have any fasting glucose.
And what was the 123 and 126 up at the top?
That was what the hemoglobin A1C translated to. Down on line 82. The 5.9 hemoglobin A1C back.
Oh,
in
average. 5.9 is very high. So I would suspect
yep.
that. The other things we want to look at for prediabetes is her triglyceride HDL ratio. And it's not terrible, but it's not good. It's 2.26. I'd rather see it at 1, 2 at the very highest. It's higher. So this is an indication of early prediabetes, insulin resistance, right? Did she do hemoglobin A1C? You said 5.9. Yeah, that's way too high, right? That's even in the range that conventional medicine says is pre-diabetic is insulin resistance. Okay.
So what that translated to, that 123 up top was.
That's what 123 was, the average based on that. Yeah. Got it.
Based on the labs.
Okay. Yeah. So I would say pre-diabetes for sure. Is she open to, you said she's compliant, getting a glucose meter and starting to test.
Oh, God, it's changed her life too. Yes. Doing that.
Okay. So she's doing it. Yes. Okay. So she's doing it. Has she done, you know, the elimination diet, you know, gone on.
Yes. We're doing all of that.
You're doing all that. Okay.
The low iron of 51, you know, she has a lot of energy. She's in love with life. Don't really see hypochlorhydria, but that, you know, that would be my closest association with the low iron.
You know what I'm seeing here? Like, look back, okay? She's got a low iron of 51. She's got a high ferritin of 225.
Right.
Okay. Whenever you see a disparity like that, what we'd expect to see was one I saw a couple of days ago, you know, the ferritin was, well, or like your other client when she was back when was a ferritin of 6 and a iron of 20. That was what you would expect. You'd expect to see either both of them high or both of them low. And this is again going back to why it's important to do functional analysis, not absolute. You go, oh, your iron's low. Some doctors do just iron. Some doctors do just ferritin. More and more of them are just doing ferritin. But the more I see of this when we do both is that it's really important to do both and say, okay, what is going on here? If the iron is low, but the ferritin is high, why isn't the body taking the ferritin and converting it into iron? Okay. And I'm still looking at that. I believe it has to do with the liver and it's probably an enzyme. We figured it out going the other direction. When the iron is high and the ferritin is low, that iron has to be converted to, a ferrous or ferric form. I forget which one it is that it goes from and to, but it's the conversion to that form requires melatonin. So we figured this out on somebody just on the spot, like looking at this and go, oh, and she goes, oh, wow, I just got my melatonin tested on my adrenal test and I have low melatonin. And sure enough, as she started to supplement, those numbers started to come closer. Right. So I don't know what to tell you about the other direction other than inflammation and liver. So inflammation is super important and ferritin will go high when there's inflammation.
Okay.
So we want to look at what's inflamed. So what could be causing it? If she's just recently switched over her diet and you're doing elimination diet, she could be in the process of actually turning this around, right? If this is a relatively new person. But you want to look at what are the ways I can help her to support inflammation? So you want to look at fatty acids. What's her omega-6-3 ratio? Some people come in on what looks like an impeccable diet. You know, they're off gluten, they're off dairy, they're off sugar, they're eating lots of greens, they're getting enough protein, but they're still having issues. And sometimes it's because their omega-6-3s are out. They're drinking almond milk instead of dairy milk, right? Which is very high omega-6. And throws off the omega-3. So I'd suggest that you pull out in the fats module, I think that's module 3 or 4, whatever it is, the macronutrient module, pull out the Excel spreadsheet. And that Excel spreadsheet has a thing that you can put in what she's eating. You don't have to put every morsel of food, only the foods that contain any significant fat. Oh, so she had a cup of almond milk. She had 5 walnuts. She had, you know, half a cup of chia. And you put those in there and you'll be able to see exactly what her omega-6-3 ratio is. And if her omega-6-3 ratio is above 3, then that's one way to start to address the inflammation. So lots of information in that macronutrients module about how to deal with inflammation. But there's herbs, right? You know the herbs, ginger, turmeric, boswellia, things like that to help her support it. Vitamin C, right?
Yep.
So I'd be looking at all of these. Now she has a low iron. Yeah. Okay. That's different. Sometimes when we have a high iron and a low hemoglobin, then we think about B6 because B6 is important for taking the iron and incorporate it into hemoglobin, but that's not the case here. Okay. I'd be looking at her. I'd look at her homocysteine because that's another inflammatory marker, especially with her lipids being out of whack like that. That could suggest B12, B6, folate as an issue. So I'd be looking at her homocysteine.
Do you know what that test usually runs, Dr.
Ah, $35.
Okay.
Not much. You can do it at Direct Labs for $35, maybe even $25.
Okay. There's just so much pushback within the Kaiser system.
She's willing to just spend $20 and just test it the one time. You don't have to keep testing it if it's normal, but if it's abnormal, then you want to do it every 3 months until you get it down. And it usually responds pretty quickly. What else is there? Yeah, so those are the main. And D. Did you do her D? Where's the D?
Oh, yeah. She was 11, and the MD put her on 50,000 units of
a
D2.
Week, though.
Of
D2? Why D2?
Because that's what the MD did. And, you know, we talked about it, and she wanted to go with that because I think she had already filled the prescription and she just started that like 3 weeks ago.
Okay. So, you know, whenever you're doing D supplementation and you want to get the level ideal, in my humble opinion, I think you want to, with a level that low, retest them in 6 weeks to see if you're giving them sufficient. So why make them suffer for a long period of time and go back in 6 months and find out that it went from 11 to 15?
Okay.
You know what I mean? So I would do it at 6 weeks. And if it's significantly going up, great.
Yep. Unfortunately, Kaiser has their own plan for that. And
they test it every 6 months to a year.
I think it's going to be in October. Yes. And so, you know, I've got to play where I can play.
Right. Play where you can play. But you can give her your opinion. Say, great. I appreciate it. You want to go with your doctor's orders. You know, sometimes what happens is you go back and then 6 months later, it's barely moved. And if you're open to it, testing it at 6 weeks just to do a spot check would be very helpful. Because the studies with D goes up very quickly. I mean, they put people on, you take them from, you know, single digits and put them on 100,000 and like test again in a week and it's into the normal range. Of course, it's going to come down if you don't keep supplementing. And that's a ridiculous amount to give because nobody's going to take that much and nobody needs to take that much, but it can go up really quickly. So if you see somebody that's really low, you can give them 100,000 for a week and then you can, you know, drop it down to a more reasonable, you know, 10 to 15 and then retest it 2 to 3 months.
Well, it's so interesting because the physician's assistant told her to go out and buy an over-the-counter off-the-shelf D3 and take 1,000 a day for the rest of her life and no need to retest. And then you've got me coming in with my functional approach and then the MD writing a script that she doesn't have to pay for D2, which we know is not as effective. And
it's not as effective. I mean, there's a variety of studies that compare it, and it's usually anywhere from, you know, I've seen it be as little as 15% less absorbed to as much as 45 or 50% less absorbed. Yeah. So it's still going to get absorbed, but 50 a week. Think about that. 50 a week. She's at 11. 50 a week. That's an average of less than 10,000 a day of a D2. I mean, it's probably the equivalent of her taking 5 or 6, maybe, probably more like 5,000.
Okay.
Of the D3 a day. So that's kind of low for somebody with an 11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't know if we have to wrap it too, but just another plug. I did raise my rates by adding the functional blood lab review, letting people know very clearly, you know, I'm not diagnosing or treating. That was a significant jump that I took. And I've just gotten two contracts signed, so I'm really very, very grateful.
I will tell you, and I'll tell everybody listening, that is something that people absolutely love. And I need to just get back to doing a program in this. My very first online program, other than Green Cleanse, was doing a blood chem analysis for a group. And I had 109 people signed up with me. And we went through and I explained to them, I taught them what it meant. And we had case breakouts where they would upload their tests and I would share them on the screen and I would teach them, and people love it. They love anything to do with labs.
They really do. They do.
And I know others in the program have done that, where they created a package, like an intro package that is just get your blood chemistry done, or they've included it in their packages, and people, that really makes a difference between you just sitting there and talking to them, which they're going, oh, what am I going to learn from that, versus the other. I've had people, when I was first starting in practice and I would talk about the labs, I've literally have had people call me and say, I just got my labs back from my doctor. Can I just pay you to tell me what it means?
Yeah, it is so different. What we're seeing and predicting, as you mentioned, you know, it's so significantly different.
Yeah, totally. I'm glad to hear that.
I have a new 88-year-old gentleman who is just the sweetest guy alive. 20 years of constipation.
Oh, my God.
And it's all over his laps. And I'm preparing. I'm going to make a house call on Saturday. So I'm doing a lot of preparation and research for him.
Oh, good for you. Now, I will put out there, like, there's a lot of causes of constipation, and everybody, all the MDs just jump to give him a laxative, right? Solve the presenting symptom. But there's so many underlying causes of constipation, right? It could be thyroid. It could be a liver stagnation. It could be Parkinson's.
Sorry, he's got diarrhea. I'm sorry.
Oh, diarrhea. Oh, diarrhea. Okay, opposite.
For the 88-year-old, yeah. So malnourishment and inflammation, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Malnutrition.
But
getting back to Go ahead. Sorry.
Didn't have explosive diarrhea for the first time in months last night because we were cleaning up his diet.
Cleaning up the diet makes a huge difference for diarrhea. I wish I could say that it made as huge a difference for constipation, but sometimes it does. Obviously, somebody's just on processed food and you get them on real food, they start to move their bowels. But a lot of times constipation is one of those really tricky ones because you've got to look at all those factors, right? So it's not just a matter of giving them good food that has good fiber, right? It's a lot more than that. Yeah, a lot more than that. Yeah. Dry constipation, moist constipation, liver stagnation constipation. But Parkinson's has been really, like, recently, I learned that from, I think it was Zatis Karazian first, was that that's an early sign of Parkinson's. It's constipation. Yep.
I think also he said, Dr. Rita Marie, double frozen shoulder.
Double frozen shoulder. Holy cow.
Yeah, as a sign of Parkinson's as well.
Wow.
I reached out to my Apex contact asking her for justification of that claim, and
I'd like to hear more about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Parkinson's makes sense, but Parkinson's, you know, early onset Parkinson's anyway, and early onset Alzheimer's is very frequently associated with gluten intolerance. First learned that from Tom O'Brien, like, I don't know, 15 years ago when I first heard him speak at one of the conferences, nutrition conferences, and I'm like, oh my God, that's when I got really lit up about gluten intolerance and the widespread effects that it causes.
That's the guy with interstitial cystitis I've been talking to you about. Finally spent an hour convincing him to get his Vibrant America test last night. Mayo Clinic wants to do a biopsy on his poor, quads. And he said, let's do this first. So
hopefully
the insurance did about that out.
Good.
Anyway,
well, you're doing great work. I'm really excited for all the stuff you're doing. You're doing a great job. So keep it up and keep your questions coming.
I'm almost too busy now.
That's great. Yay. Exciting. Yeah. That's so exciting. Great. Right. All right. Are you there? Did you stop hearing me?
Oh.
Can you hear me now? I just saw a flash up at me about my microphone, so I was looking at that. I don't know.
I lost you there for a minute.
Oh, okay, just for a minute. Okay, good. Maybe it was when it was flashing up and asking me if I had to do something with my mic. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Your questions are great, and I really, I appreciate them, and I think everybody's learned from it. You guys can type into the chat and let us know. Have you learned a lot of good stuff from Cynthia's cases? So thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
All right. Who's a lot of comments here. Let's see. Oh, thanks, Lynn. Put that up. Oh, good. Dick and Weatherby said we could get it at student rate even after graduation. That's great. How to get that deal? Okay, so in some discussion about various people's genes, we don't have to read through all those. How much my genetics shows I also take 2,000 a day. Okay. Lynn said, my dad had Parkinson's and he had a frozen shoulder and terrible stools his whole life. Interesting. Interesting. Tony said, great share. Thanks, Cynthia. Yay. Okay. Oh, Lynn found an article. I'm going to save that article. I'm just going to click on it and open a new tab. An article on frozen shoulder and Parkinson's. So there you go, if you're still on, Cynthia. So Tony said, thanks for making the blood chem available to us. It has added so much value. So thank Dr. Weatherby. I mean, I just reached out to him, and we've been doing that with a lot of different, you know, places and trying to get a lot of cool deals for all you guys. Yeah, Shonda said too. So too. I think so too. I think it's really great. But I still like mine too. I always put it in both because mine gives me a visual right there on the page and I can quickly go through it. But the report is great because it gives you so much information and explanation, and it has all those links you can click on to learn about all the highs and the lows and the follow-ups and all that. Plus it gives you a nice report to give clients. So that's what I really love. Yay. Tony said she uses both too. Yes, I can.
Where will we find the article that Lynn sourced?
Oh, in the chat. Did you click the chat?
Oh, I'll figure that out. Okay.
You're just on the web, or are you?
I'm on the web. I'm on the
Phone only?
I think so.
Okay. Well, maybe Lynn can just pull it out and post it onto the Facebook group. That would be good. People might like that.
I think so many people have frozen shoulders. That might be really helpful, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's a good connection to make. All right. Anyone else? And I want to welcome Lynn. Lynn just joined our CMDS program yesterday. So, and I know Lynn from Austin. She comes to our potlucks, and she's an awesome homeopathic practitioner and works with kids a lot. So welcome. I'm really glad to have you, Lynn. All right. Who else? No other questions? Yay. Am I going to get off early and actually go get a glass of water and eat before my next call? I've been on calls literally nonstop since 9 o'clock. I have not even been to the bathroom. So it would be good to have a 10-minute break to go to the bathroom.
I have a quick one. I have a quick question.
Yeah.
What causes someone to be put on blood thinners?
Okay, so blood thinners. So there is a number of things. It could be circumstantial. So they've had surgery, and they usually put people on blood thinners to make sure that they don't clot, like especially a heart cardiac type surgery. If they've got an embolism, if they suspect an embolism, if they've got markers in their blood, so high platelet counts. And then there's prothrombin time and other things if they're measuring, and they would put them on blood. So usually there's some suspicion of it. They'll test, they'll see if it's needed. But a lot of time it's done prophylactically after surgery.
Okay.
To prevent that, because, you know, embolism, that's what killed my grandmother after, well, triple bypass surgery, quadruple bypass surgery, and all the things that led up to that. But she, was recovering from the surgery and she got an embolism and it went into her lungs and killed her. So they don't want to take those chances.
Okay, but 3 years after surgery?
I would measure prothrombin time and platelets to see if the person needs to be on blood thinners. And also, here's the thing, there's so many good herbal and nutritional, like omega-3s. I would do on somebody who's on blood thinners, if they're willing to talk to their doctor about switching it up, I do a blood spot fatty acid test and see what their omega-6-3 balance is. You could do it dietarily and see what it's going to be, but people who have low omega-3s are going to be at risk, higher risk than somebody who doesn't. So vitamin E, omega-3s, you know, and things like turmeric and other things, a lot of those things, here's a way to know, any herb or nutrient that has a contraindication that says do not take with warfarin is probably something that has some blood thinning capacity.
Right. Well, that's my challenge, is finding, this is the 88-year-old with two MDs as children and a very cooperative, to some extent, MD that he's seen. How do I justify these herbals with clinical, you know, with scientific?
Oh, go to Medline and search. There's tons of articles on it. It's well documented. But here's the thing. Here's what you find with a lot of the MDs. They're afraid of their license, right? So if they go outside of the scope, this is what you do. This is the protocol you do with somebody who has whatever indications this guy has, if surgery or whatever, for blood thinners. They don't want to run the risk, because if the guy dies because they did medical protocol, they can't be sued. If the guy dies and it has nothing to do with what he did, but it's outside of medical protocol, like, you know, or didn't prescribe these medications, he could be sued.
Mm-hmm.
So they do a lot of CYA.
Yeah.
And we have a litigious society. So, you know, they're trying to protect their assets, right? Their business, their family, their, right? So they don't always do what's the right thing to do necessarily.
Yeah. So unfortunate. Okay.
I wasn't taught this in medical school, therefore I'm not going to do it, is the attitude of a lot. And there's a lot that don't. There's a lot that step outside beyond that.
Yeah. Well, I'm working on educating them too.
We all are, right? So that's why it's so great to have this village, right? This village of practitioners who are looking to do that, because we have to educate the people to ask for something different. Right.
Good.
Super. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. All right. I don't see any other questions. I'm going to check one more time in the QA. All right. You guys, thank you so much. Thank you, Lynn, for joining and for being so active. And thank you, Cynthia, for the great cases and all the great questions and everyone. And we will talk again soon. Bye.